I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
We continue our look at Annapolis in the course of this next hour. I want to remind you to join us a week from Wednesday, January 12th, the opening day of the session, from 7:30 to 10 a.m. in Annapolis. We have our annual Annapolis Summit, where the governor, the president of the Senate, and the Speaker of the House all join us for a conversation. You're welcome to join us there. This is our partners of the Baltimore Business Journal, of course, WEA Radio, and we're sponsored by Stevenson University, the Maryland State Education Association, the Greater Baltimore Committee, and you. We want you there at and you can get there by calling 410-454-0500. That's 410-454-0500, and you can reserve your seat or just go to summit@steinershow.org. We are joined now in the studio here by State Delegate Kurt Anderson from the 43rd District and State Senator Verna Jones-Rodwell, who will be here shortly. She joins us by phone as she's driving into the studio because traffic is bad out there. And State Senator Jones-Rodwell, welcome.
Hello. How are you, Mark?
I'm very well. How are you?
Hi, Senator.
I'm doing great. And hello, Kurt. How are you?
Delegate?
I'm doing fine.
And congratulations on being the chairman of the Maryland State Senate delegation.
Well, thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. And so this is going to be a very interesting year to be in Annapolis.
They're interesting every year.
Every year is interesting.
But, I mean, we were talking about before we went on the air earlier, $2.2 billion structural deficit, mm-hmm. not counting our pension funds.
Yes, it's 2.2, 2.2, 1.9, it depends on who you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a looming deficit. Every year I've been here, there's been a deficit, except for the first 2 years when I was in the House. But, yes, that structural deficit is still looming. And last year we were able to do some backfill with the stimulus money we got, but we won't have the benefit of that this year. Unless there is another appropriations from the federal government that we could use to ease some of the pain that's going to be created by the deficit.
And we really have to look at other kinds of ways to structure the budget over the years. We've pretty much been responding to the economic pressures, the downturn in the economy, with some of the layoffs or some of the what do you call those days again?
Furlough.
The furlough days. And we really need to look at long-term structural changes to the deficit, as well as differences in how we run state government. One of the things that we have not looked at, and a lot of states are looking at these days, is trying to cut down some of the things that are always going to be there. Now, we can't cut back on education, can't cut back on Medicaid, Medicare. The pensions are one of the things that people are looking at. But the other thing that is really curious that we have not done in Maryland, and that is look at our prison system. Our prison system cost us a lot of money. You know, 10 years ago, it was like, you know, we had maybe 14,000 people in prison. Now we've got 25,000 people in prison. And we really need to look at some of the reasons why they're there and actually who's there. I mean, that's just one of the ways that we can do this.
Well, that's not just a budgeting issue. That's also how we are sentencing and how we charge people and how we identify different crimes and penalties for those crimes. So that's not just a budetary issue.
But I agree with you
that we should look at how we do reform our correctional system as well as our health system. But I think that we have to look at a combination of strategies to really try to grapple with this this problem. The spending, the raising of new revenues, as well as just making sure that we have things that are in place that are sustainable.
Well, let me ask you both this question. I think, and I'm jumping here immediately. I don't want to spend the entire hour on this, but maybe just a few more minutes because we just raised the issue, Kurt. And I don't know what can the state legislature really do about reforming our state prison system. And I may just throw one stat that I have to say over and over again because it boggles my mind to think about this one particular statistic over and over again. I got it from Ta-Nehisi Coates' blog at Atlantic Monthly, Ta-Nehisi being the son of Paul Coates, who's now become an editor at Atlantic, brilliant young guy. 0.6% of the world's population are African Americans. 0.6%. 8% of all the prisoners on planet Earth are American black men.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even count the women, American black men.
Right.
Something is wrong.
There was very wrong.
Something's very wrong with that number.
Let me recommend to your audience a book called The New Jim Crow.
It's an incredible book.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it kind of details how we were dealt with, we being African Americans, dealt with back in the 20s, 30s, and 40s with Jim Crow laws, and how they've now transformed into acceptable legal standards in the community in terms of being able to hold back African Americans by incarcerating them, giving them criminal records, keeping them from getting jobs, not being there to raise their children. The children then have inferior educations. They don't have parents who show up for various things. They can't get jobs. They commit crimes. And this started back in the 60s and the 70s. Now we're in a third or fourth generation of this subculture. And really, nobody is paying attention to it except for those of us who are here in the African-American community, those of us who are here in urban areas, and we understand that something is definitely wrong. Now, trying to convince our conservative counterparts about that is where the problem is.
Right? Yeah, I think that, if I may, Kurt, I think that that is a problem, but I think that there are some remedies, and I just have to be kind of myopic at this point, that I think the legislators, the African-American, more progressive-thinking legislators, that we have to make sure that there's some legislative remedies, because a lot of this is inherent in our system, our legislative system, unfortunately. And I think that we need to pay attention to it. There's been a lot of rhetoric, espoused over the years, and I think that we should really make sure that we organize, going back to basics, organizing, educating, our colleagues, as well as, the larger powers to be, because some of the people that, feel as though that there's a vested interest in keeping this cycle going, they aren't the ones that are going to make any changes. So we, the people, need to be making the changes. And when I say we, the people, I mean all of us, those that are in legislative positions of influence, as well as the people that are being affected, as well as those other individuals that have means.
Senator Jones and Delegate Anderson, I want to ask you, we didn't get a chance really to talk with the newly elected officials in the last hour about social issues. We did talk a lot about education and some of those things, but I want to ask you both your thoughts, and I have been friends with both of you for a very long time, and I'm curious about this partisan environment that people talk about in Annapolis. And we know that a lot of, although the numbers are small, a lot of the Republicans that are coming to the legislature are very conservative Republicans. And the Tea Party was very active. I don't know how successful they were, but very active in a lot of campaigns. Some people are saying, and we'll be watching this, Mark and I, about the partisanship, the just saying no for the sake of trying to thwart a Democratic agenda or a Republican agenda. What's your thoughts on that? And then, of course, around the country, we still see this debate on the part of conservatives and progressives around same-sex marriage in states. And that's where the battles are taking place, in these states, state by state. Either they are turning and affirming same-sex marriage, or they are writing into their constitutions or having referendums to say no under any circumstance. I just want to get your thoughts on those.
Do you mind if I go first, Senator Jones?
Sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. First of all, my committee, the Judiciary Committee in Annapolis, has been the battleground for all those issues that you've talked about. I mean, we've had delegates bring in legislation to try to get rid of judges that worked on that issue, to try to get rid of the Attorney General, to impeach somebody, which is not even in the Constitution. Yet they continue to bring these kinds of pieces of legislation to gain publicity for their cause, to show everybody else that I'm way more conservative than you are. You know, it's one of these things where they've got to show that we're tough on the illegals. And they almost spit when they say illegals. And same-sex marriage. It's just such almost a hatred, and it's thinly veiled from what we would have called racism 40 or 50 or 60 years ago. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's not doesn't play as much as it does on the national scene in Maryland, but those who do this on this, and I'll mention Delegate Don Dwyer of Annapolis,
who's become a national figure on this issue. And around,
look, you talk to him, he's a nice guy, but when he gets onto these issues, it looks like his eyes roll back in his head, and another persona takes over. And be honest with you, it just seems like, and we look at each other and say, "What the heck is going on here?"
Right. Well, I think that you're always going to have those naysayers. I'm sorry, you finish.
Yes, ma'am.
You're always going to have those naysayers, and you're going to always have those people, those media, those media hogs. And I think that we have to work as strategic and as smartly as possible in organizing the individuals of like minds and to look at where we can make impacts. We might not be able to get everything we want right up front, but we can. There are little wins, and not so little, like the inheritance tax, that we were able to pass in the Senate. Making sure the individuals that have brought property together that their mate can inherit the property without paying all these crazy taxes. We have to look at where we can make inroads, and still keeping our eyes on the prize and still working for that, but at the same time having other strategies in place so that they're wins, so that everybody gets their fair share. It's their equalizers out there. And I believe that, this partisanship, you're going to have that out there, but I think we have to, since I'm a Democrat, let me speak for Democrats, this Democrat. We have to have courage. We cannot be afraid and say, I'm this person's going to do that, that person's going to do this, and not make any movement towards positive change. We have to stand up for what we believe in and go for it. But not as, not just off the cuff. I'm talking about being strategic and making sure that individuals that have an interest in something being done, that they are behind it. And I just, because I think what I see over in Washington and in the General Assembly is ridiculous. And we let these individuals get all of the media time, they're, out front, and we're back shaking in our boots. And I think that makes us look weak, and we are and that diminishes our effectiveness.
Let me open the phones here. Join us here, folks. Anthony McCarthy, of course. It's Monday. We're in the studio together. This is Mark Steiner. We are joined. You just heard State Senator Verna Jones Rodwell, from the Maryland's 44th District, Delegate Kurt Anderson, 43rd District.
Hey, Mark, can I just say I'm very pleased to be here on a Monday when Anthony is here. I have not actually seen him for almost probably a year.
It's been a while.
And let me just tell you, you have lost some weight.
He
looks like a different guy, you really look good. I just want to tell you the good.
I appreciate that.
The old year has been good to you, and I hope the new year is better.
Amen. I agree.
Amen. I'll go along with that. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're talking with two of critical leaders from our delegation here in Baltimore City. We've been talking with leaders from across the state as well. And we want to get your questions and thoughts for them. This is a very serious session we're facing in terms of the fiscal future of the state, where the budget is now. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Mr. White, who've been holding on since the last hour, you're on the air.
Thank you, sir. And I appreciate it. First time caller. And I appreciate you taking my call.
I appreciate you calling.
Your guest. My first question is, or pretty much is the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, when the Maryland State Lottery System came into play, part of that money was supposed to go to the school system. Number two, the fact is, in raising money, being that we're in a deficit, I think if we enforce the traffic end of the laws, as far as raising the fees on certain things, such as a simple turn signal, which 99% of the drivers out here don't use them. So if the police department were to enforce that and cite them accordingly, then there's money right there to add to the deficit so that we will no longer be in a deficit.
Well, traffic fees from traffic cases actually go, they actually don't even come back to the general fund. They go back to the Maryland judiciary. Fees, though, from registering your car or fees from transferring your title tags and things like that, that's money that does come to the it doesn't come to the general fund, but it comes to the Maryland Transportation Trust Fund.
Mm-hmm.
But even if they were to come to the general fund, it is such a minuscule amount. I believe in traffic fines last year meted out across the state was less than something was less than $10 million. Our budget is in the $24 billion.
Budget.
And you know, so we got to look at some major changes. One of the changes we could look at, which hasn't been looked at for years, is increasing the tax on beer, wine, and alcohol.
Yes.
Those haven't been changed since 1955.
Well, I think Mr. White has one more question. Well, let me ask you before we go back to Mr. White. I'd like to, you and the Senator, what do you think about the increase on the, will it happen this year, and how much will it be?
Well, we've been talking about it for several years. It got more intense last year. But I'm sure that there will be proposals to increase them because that lobby can't hold it back that long.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I have been sponsoring. I've been the primary sponsor of the bill for the last several years. And last year, the Lorraine Sheehan Health and Community Service Act of 2010 will be the same act of 2011. And we're looking at raising $214 million in new revenue. And as the delegate Anderson said, the excise tax on spirits has not been raised since 1955 and beer since 1972. That's absolutely ridiculous. There's no industry in this state, I believe, in this country that can be held harmless when our country is suffering. You have individuals so many individuals that are uninsured as far as health care is concerned, and we're leaving a whole segment harmless.
And Senator Jones, right, well, the other thing is that they're talking about, well, we got to find some income someplace. So I've heard talk about them looking at the gasoline tax. Now,
yes.
That is absolutely ridiculous.
Why?
Well, first of all, our gasoline tax is already higher, our state portion of it, than most of the jurisdictions, Delaware, Virginia, D.C., and Pennsylvania around us. But number two, the reality is that oil has gone up to $92 a barrel. They expect it to go up to $100 a barrel. And if the cost of gasoline goes up, and then we add a gas tax to that, we're talking about a major increase in cost for our state. And you can't, as elected officials, we have to be able to look forward and see what the impact is going to be of our actions in January on people who are trying to do things in July, August, or September this year.
Well,
vacations, things like that.
I hear you, and I can't say I agree with you. I think that the gas tax, I think that, and even with the federal portion of it, I think that it's going to go up. And I think that it is a federal issue. It's not just a federal, it's an international issue that is going to have to be dealt with. But I don't think that we can ignore the gas tax and say, well, we can't touch the gas tax. But, you know, something that I think that you gave a lot of rationale for more money in public transportation and trying to get individuals, out of the cars and in on good public transportation. And we have a lot of good projects going in both the Washington suburbs as well as the Baltimore metropolitan area.
Yeah, but if people got out of cars, then the gas tax wouldn't be a viable alternative to raise money. The only reason why they're talking about it now is because everybody drives.
That's not true, Delegate Anderson. But I think that, there are a lot of issues that we can discuss, but given the time, like we had talked about, there are several strategies that we have to look at for dealing with this budget deficit, and raising revenues is one of them. And then we have to look at cutting expenses, and we really have to look at what is viable. We have over 80,000 state employees, and we can't, cut to the bone. I mean, the buyout that the governor proposed, that's one alternative as far as helping individuals to, instead of being laid off, instead of being furloughed, that they would be able to buy out of their state employment. But that means that we have to create more opportunities in the private sector. So how is that going to be done?
Well,
okay.
I just want to open the phone so we're getting some other listeners calling. I think that the issues, no, this is great. I mean, I think it's important to have two sides in this gas tax issue.
Exactly.
One of the debates we have to have coming up in the next couple of months and really look at that. And I would ask more questions about that, but I would take away from Anthony McCarthy and our callers. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Rodney in Columbia, you're on the air.
Rodney?
Rodney, you're there? Rodney?
Okay.
Okay, let's go to Dave in Baltimore. You're on the air. Dave, you there?
Hello?
Hold on. Are you there, Dave?
This is Rodney. Can you hear me?
Rodney, we got you, Rodney. Go ahead.
Okay, there we go. That was
sorry, man. Go ahead. You're on the air.
How you doing? Kurt, good evening. Long time. Rodney here. I was assistant state attorney in Baltimore County. We had a number of cases together.
Hey, man. How you doing?
I'm good.
Who won a me or you?
I think I pretty much won every single one.
Wow.
I'm sure you did, yes.
No, you know, my question, I like what you guys are saying, what Senator Jones is saying, but I'm very curious on the local and maybe more on the national level. What I don't see from the Democratic Party, it seems as though they've become a party of apologetics, as opposed to, like what Senator Jones said about taking a stand and fighting for it. It's like the Republicans have recognized, and / the Tea Party has recognized, that use certain buzzwords, these catchphrases, and all of a sudden they've got all these independents and all these other people right behind them. I don't know if it's education on the Democratic part, that they have to sit down and explain stuff to people, and maybe much shorter, you know, using certain buzz forms to say, this is why we're doing what we're doing. But I just don't seem, I don't see that coming from the Democrats. And I think that, though I think the Tea Party Republicans have just gone out and out just crazy and radical, but I also think that they're gaining ground. Now, I do think that they're going to end up imploding themselves coming up shortly, just because I think that they've gone so radical. But I still don't see that the Democrats take a – I just don't like the way they fight. I've said this before, that if I were in a back alley 3 o'clock in the morning, I had a choice between having a Democrat back me up in a fight or Republican, I'd take the Republican. They're going down there fighting, and I don't see that. So I'm just curious to know where you guys see – from the national front, where you're headed in terms of specialty strategy.
Rodney, that's a great question. There's a lot of people think that the Democrats have lost their fight.
Well, Rodney, listening to what you're saying, you sound like, you know, the Republicans have a better form as opposed to the Democrats, that they're able to package their message a little bit better. But the actual, if you go a little bit below that to the substance of what has happened over the last year, and the fact of the matter is that those Tea Partiers and some of the conservative Republicans were able to take advantage of the fact that most people in this country felt like they weren't better off today than they were last year. In fact, they're way worse. That employment has gone up to nearly 10%. That you know, the people are losing their homes, mortgages are being foreclosed on, and the Democrats apparently were spending their time trying to pass a health care bill. So. Yeah, they said, you know, they put it in a way, in a manner that was very simple for people to understand. Do you feel better this year, or now that President Obama has been here for 2 years, than you felt last year? And I think the overwhelming, the resounding vote against Congress this year was a result of that, not necessarily the fact that the Democrats couldn't explain their platform better than Republicans.
Senator, do you agree with that?
I believe that there's a level of discipline that the Democrats don't have. I hope I'm saying that as diplomatically as possible. And I believe that, you know, that yes, you do have to package your message, but you have to have a message.
Exactly.
And I believe that that individuals have these weren't new feelings. I'm sure that these were feelings that individuals have felt long before, you know, the the downcline of the recession, and this, and then when they started feeling a little more of a pinch in their pockets, they just were given an excuse to say, oh, you know, it's the current folks' fault, when all of this stuff started back with other administrations. So, and because they just started being louder and louder, people started saying, oh, okay, it's okay for me to say something. It's okay for me to say something even though it's not politically correct. People got tired of being politically correct, so they decided to say whatever they wanted to say and do whatever they wanted to do, no matter what.
And Rod, and look, Rodney's memory is a little short, because just 2 years ago, the Democrats packaged a pretty strong message that won them the presidency, won them the White House. And it was a simple message: change.
Yeah, but the problem was that the Republicans are great at simple messages. Democrats haven't got their simple message together, and people voted for change and didn't see it.
Right.
Well, exactly, because...
Well, I think the change, there was change, but the change was not packaged. It wasn't articulated. People didn't understand, you know, the change. They didn't. They were looking not for a change. They were looking for immediate gratification. And change doesn't mean immediate gratification. So there needed to be some type of discernment, exactly what, you know, how are we defining this change? So, I think that we have a long way to go in Democrats and Republicans and people. And I don't want to go off like I'm pie in the sky, but at the same time, come on. You know, like we can talk to one another and we can do things, and you know, we move on a scarcity mentality, thinking that if you get something, I don't get enough, and I will never get enough. And if you just indulge me for a second, I was looking at the Twilight Zone marathon. I was just happened to be cleaning up over the weekend, and there was something from the 1950s, a program with '60s with Rod Sterling that spoke to this exact same mob mentality that came up during the last presidential election, but that was defeated because people wanted to see change, and it's come back again because people didn't get that immediate gratification. So it's something in the way that we're dealing with one another and being really authentic about what we want to see done.
We have to take a very short break and come right back to our conversation with State Senator Verna Jones Rodwell and State Delegate Kurt Anderson and Anthony McCarthy. The ever diminishing Anthony McCarthy, just not his mind. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join us. Remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics, events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. We will be right back. Go right to your calls, Dave, Aaron, D. That's one. Those are three people. Take your calls when we come back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary, specialty, and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state of Maryland, the number is 1-800-492-5538. And Anthony McCarthy and I are joined this hour in studio by State Delegate Kurt Anderson of the 43rd District, State Senator Verna Jones Rodwell from the 44th, two of our leading figures in the state Senate outside the city of Baltimore. The influence is wide and large. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Reminding you on the way to the phones right away to join us a week from Wednesday in Annapolis, 7:30 to 10 a.m. at the Calvert House for our 8th annual Annapolis Summit with the governor, the president of the state Senate, and the Speaker of the House. This our partners of the Baltimore Business Journal, of course, WEAA Radio, and it's sponsored by the Stevenson University, the Real Estate Education Association, the Greater Baltimore Committee. And you can call 410-454-0500 to reserve your place in the audience, have a chance to be a part of the dialogue, or write to summit@steinershow.org. But be there. And it's an event you don't want to miss. Your chance.
Every year, Mark, you make news. The governor or the Senate president or the speaker always say something.
They always say something.
That really generates a lot of buzz around Annapolis. It's a great event.
And you got something to eat as well.
That's right.
Let's go right to the phones. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Dave in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, Mark. I want to thank you and Anthony for this show and the delegate and senator for attending and taking questions. And I guess when I think it was the senator mentioned Maryland has a deficit of about $2 billion. And I know by one calculation, the cost of the war in Afghanistan is about $2 billion a week.
A week, and that's right. Right.
And I know as one citizen, I just have deep questions about where that money is going and what benefits we're getting. And I guess, in a nutshell, is there anything that the delegate and senator can do on this level to see that this kind of thinking, and I think there are a lot of people that have questions about this, is expressed, and we can steer money from the federal government into transportation, education, health, et cetera, the big needs in our state, upkeeping our infrastructure, et cetera.
Sure. If I may.
Go ahead.
I think that my level of influence is at the state level. So do you mind me just talking about a couple of things with the state level? Because there are hundreds of millions of dollars that we can realize at the state level. One is combined reporting. One is looking at closing loopholes with different corporations. And we aren't doing that here in Maryland. I was on a tax reform commission, and the businesses, and we do have to make sure the private businesses are viable so that we can employ individuals in the private sector. However, we have to look at whether or not individuals are paying their fair share in Maryland taxes. One of the ways of doing that that was discussed, was examined over the summer during the interim, was a form called combined reporting. It was decided by the commission that combined reporting wouldn't happen. That was a way of closing loopholes. Well, I think that we legislators have to be brave enough to look at closing those loopholes and not being afraid of making sure that we are challenging the industries that say that they will fall apart and we will lose all of these private sector jobs, but hold them to the test of making sure that they pay their fair taxes. Just pay their fair taxes. That's all I'm saying there. I was hearing that we can't do any new taxes. We can't, you know, really put any more burdens on individuals. Well, that was the same thing I was hearing from businesses. There are places that we can create revenue by doing taxing, not disproportionately, but, you know, we can do that here at the state level. Also, I think we need to look at the incentives that we give large corporations for coming into the state of Maryland, holding them accountable to making sure that jobs are created, that economic spinoff is really created, rather than just keeping certain funds within their coffers and not spreading the wealth. So I think the state of Maryland should look at how we can better save money and create opportunities to generate revenues, and also encourage our federal delegation to do what they can do. But, you know, there are only six people.
Delegate.
Well, I was trying to get back to what the caller was talking about in terms of trying to make a comparison between what the federal government spends on the war in Afghanistan and what our budget is here in Maryland. And actually, really, there's no comparison, but you have to look at what President Obama said, I guess, back when he was running for office, and he used the same terminology in terms of how much we were spending per week in Iraq. And, I mean, we were spending billions of dollars, and that was one of the things that Americans did not like, the fact that we were spending so much to wage a war in a country that wasn't really at war with us. And here at home, we're fighting for every single dollar. So I agree with the caller in that regard. However, the war in Afghanistan seems to be a little bit more directly related to what happened on September.
Still, you think?
Well, I mean, that's where Al-Qaeda's, supposedly that's where Al-Qaeda's training ground is. This is where we found some of these top Al-Qaeda operatives. And so there's at least a better justification. There never were any weapons of mass destruction to be found. It was a Bush war, and folks understood that, and that's why.
Well, we can't argue this war this hour.
Mark, if I may say, I think that the accountability issue, that $2 billion a day that the caller had said, going back to what the question the caller had originally said, I think, you know, like accountability, looking at gross overspending, you know, it's some of the same issues that's on the state level. And I think that until we start taking care of the small, you know, the state, you know, that we aren't even going to really deal with the issues that are at hand to make our federal government more responsible. But, you know, we have federal delegation. We tell them what our concerns are. But where we can make a change is at the state level.
And we're not saying this is the United States of America. We're never, ever going to stop waging war somewhere because we have such a large industrial military complex that basically runs this country. And
so you just roll over and let them do it?
Well, no, you don't roll over and let them do it. But the point is that if they don't do it, then what happens? I mean, you have thousands of people who are employed by this industry across this country. It's the same problem with our prison system.
Yeah,
we want to stop putting people in prison, but then if we cut back on that, then all the correctional officers, the state's attorneys, the judges, the public defenders don't have jobs. It's one of these things that we have to deal with, but you have to understand that there are consequences when you deal with it.
Does it make in your estimation, Senator Jones Rotwell and Delegate Anderson, does it make Democrats vulnerable to continue a conversation? Now, only I'm talking about the perception of Maryland being overtaxed. I mean, every person you talk to believes we're overtaxed. Now, Mark makes a point. I'm not sure how we get to meeting our obligations, especially around certain services, without finding more enhancements and generating revenue. I'm just wondering, and I'm sure Mark and I, when we check our emails, are going to have a lot of folks saying, why are these Democrats talking about taxes?
I'm not talking about taxes, okay? I just spent an entire summer knocking on doors in my neighborhood and talking to people and them telling me personally, face-to-face, man, we cannot deal with this anymore. And I said, I hear you, loud and clear. And these folks in this district, my district is overwhelmingly Democratic, okay? And these are Democrats saying, we cannot stand the taxes.
Well,
these are folks who are on either fixed incomes or people who are, just making it, just barely making it. And they said, look, I'm not voting for anybody again who's going to raise taxes on me. So we have to look now at alternatives in terms of where do we cut? How can we be more precise in how we run government? Where are the places that we can look at to cut rather than raise taxes during an economic downturn when gasoline is going up, price of oil is going up. We just can't burden people anymore.
I agree. I totally agree with you. We cannot burden people, and I don't think that any strategies that we put in place should just look at one way of doing something. However, it's going to have to be a combination of things. And I think any person that's thinking shrewdly has to look at not just taxing, but you also have to look at being more efficient in your delivery of services. So it's a combination of things, and it's really what is the right combination that is going to be the most equalizer, and we got to get into that conversation instead of saying it's my way or your way. You know, I mean, we have to really begin to look strategically at how to do things. I sit on the Senate Budget and Tax for the last 8 years. I've been seeing what we've been trying to do, and I've been seeing what people, you know, it's one group, the business community comes in there, or the higher income community comes in there and says, no, we don't want any more taxes. The individuals that are just going from, you know, paycheck to paycheck, they're saying, no, we can't stand any more burden. Well, everybody has to share a little little bit of the pain, and we have to come up with a strategy that makes the best out of all of these horrible situations.
Well, I have so much I want to say right now, but I promised the listeners I would go to the phones at 410-319-8888. D, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Mark.
Hi, D.
Yeah, look, I'm just thinking about the whole thing. Food is different from luxury stuff like cigarettes, alcohol, the plastic bag, that you get from the supermarket. I mean, you know, people can add, 5 cents, a bag. Because, I mean, the part of Baltimore that I live, all that stuff turned up, in the trash. And so, we can find creative ways. I mean, it's not food. Let's just slap a dollar on it. I mean, wine. Wine is not food. I drink wine. I know you drink wine, Mark.
I drink wine. Yes. How do you know that, man? How do you know I drink wine?
I like the way he said that. That's all.
Just slap a dollar on it. I mean, and you know what? I know people need to educate people about taxes. That your tax dollars, are used for services. When it snowed, to open up the pool. There's not a lot of education going on in terms of the Democrat. We're just letting the tea baggers people, speaking so loud and just really misinforming people. Thank you.
Thank you, D.
Well, even if you raise the alcohol tax, the tax on beer, the tax on spirits, it's not going to raise nearly enough money to cover the structural deficit. There's got to be other areas.
Not one thing is.
Senator Jones, I really listen patiently to a lot of your conversation, and you're continually to interrupt me. Could I just finish a thought and then I'll stop? But my point was that I agree with Senator Jones that there has to be a whole myriad of things that we look at, and certainly this is one of the taxes. But some of the other things that the state is doing needs to stop. We cannot give money to people who own land to make it conservation areas. I'm talking about millions and millions of dollars.
How can we not do that?
Because we can't afford it right now.
How can we afford to let our land not keep getting built up in development, though?
Well, it's not. It's not, Mark. I mean, the places that we're talking about on the Eastern Shore and up in Eastern Maryland, these things can wait. These things, these $70 million, $80 million projects where you buy land and just hold it in trust is not – it's time is not now, is my point, especially when you're talking about raising taxes on gasoline that would cause the price of food to go up. Man, I think I've been out of touch with you. I'm glad I'm here with you to hear you say
these things. He is chomping at the bit to say something. Mark's face.
I want to hear I'm not going to get into it.
Well, at some point, you got to say it. I mean, just let it out. I understand. Okay.
Let's move that away so there's more clarity to your voice.
All right.
Microphone a little further away.
All right.
Verna Jones-Rodwell?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Well, I guess the program open space monies that come in and go towards recreation and a lot of the public services in Baltimore City that are created with some of those land transactions that the delegate's talking about, I think that, that would be problematic if we lost a lot of that money. I had heard the earlier statement as far as we have to look at the ripple effect and how, one end is affected by, activity that might happen at the other end. And I really think that whatever strategies we put in place, we have to look at all of the ramifications of that strategy. And program open space is one area that would be drastically affected if we did, something like we stopped the transfer of certain types of property. So.
Let me get three callers in a row to hear some thoughts from our listeners real fast.
Go ahead.
We'll go 410-319-8888 first to Russ. Russ, you're on the air.
Greetings, Mark, to you and your guest.
Welcome.
Mark, I'd like to go back just for a brief moment, if I can, to what one of the earlier callers said about the lack of fight in the Democrats. And to me, it's more than just a lack of fight. It seems to be that we let things pass without even realizing we've been hitting the mouth. For example, every Republican now has this mantra of deficit, deficit, deficit. For 8 years, we endured an administration where the sitting vice president said for public consumption, not in the back smoke-filled room someplace, that deficit did not matter. And name the Republican that railed against that and said that was not true. We didn't hear this message change until we got a President Obama. But my other issue and what my question deals with is taxes. Now, I think we can all agree that there's a large number of tax laws on the books. But I heard a statistic that knocked me to the floor last year, and that is 75% of the corporations nationwide in America don't pay income tax. How does that impact Maryland, and do we have those kind of companies sitting here in our state? I mean, it seems to me that if you're going to pass a tax law, it's not going to be effective unless you figure out how to collect the tax.
Well, if I may I?
Go ahead, and then we'll go to Kurt.
Well, with the Comptroller's Office in collecting taxes, excuse me, that is one source where you would be able to find the information, because I think I heard you say something around being educated around different tax laws. And I think you could get that information from his office. And the combined reporting that I spoke of, they have a formula which they use called Water's Edge, where that they would tax individual companies that had interests or businesses in other jurisdictions, and to make sure that Maryland got the amount of money that it was due, rather than a company just collecting monies in the one state that they're located. They would also have to pay taxes in other jurisdictions where they had interest. Well, unless we have a law on the books that require businesses to do that, they don't do anything. They just pay taxes in one area, and that's it. And that's on the income that they get. They might be paying property taxes if they have, like, a building in Maryland, but all of their businesses are, is being done in Delaware. And that's where most of their money's coming in Delaware, not with the little bit of property taxes that they pay in Maryland. But if you had a combined reporting situation, they would have to pay on the income that they get in Maryland as well as the property taxes. Mm-hmm. So there are different ways of taxing these corporations, which they have been able to circumvent. And we have to be courageous with making sure that we tax them.
Let's go to another call. And is that correct? Sorry with you. 410-319-8888. John, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much. Just want to talk again on further on the tax situation. One, the gasoline tax. When you talk about increasing the gasoline tax, that is not just a one-shot tax thing. When you increase the gasoline tax, you're going to be increasing the cost of food, the cost of service, anything that requires transportation. The cost is going to go up. The cost of public transportation goes up because I understand that it's 50% cash box match for public transportation. So all of those goes up. And then once you're spending more for food, more for services, our 6% sales tax, that's going to go up also because mm-hmm. now you're spending mm-hmm. more money. So that's going to create that ripple effect in regards to it's just not gasoline tax. You're talking
right.
about taxes throughout the board that
exactly.
goes up. I think one of the things that you talk about in regards to what happened with the economy, I think one of the things that happened with low middle income is the elimination of the personal income, the personal interest deductions on low income. Those were opportunities where, if you needed to buy a car, you needed to have a credit card, you could deduct those interests.
Right.
Where upper, and the millionaires, everything that they do is done under their corporation.
John, we're almost out of time. What you're saying is really important, and I'd like to hear your voice more on the air. I think you have a lot to say to what you're saying. And I think that in America, what we do is we tax income, and not all of it,
mm-hmm.
not wealthy income. We don't tax wealth.
Yeah,
right.
But his voice is.
I may just say something
for 30 seconds.
The pension issue is going to be a big issue, Because the state just can't afford to keep picking up the teacher's pension for the local jurisdictions. And when it comes up, Mark, I really would hope that you would do a show on wealth equalizing to make sure that any of the local formula, that they do when they do the shift, because there is going to be a shift, not a whole shift, but there's going to be some shift of responsibility to the local localities. We just have to make sure that it doesn't disproportionately affect lower income communities versus higher, richer communities.
And a closing thought from you, Kurt Anderson.
Well, the voice of the last caller is the voice I heard all summer. You know, people, we have to remember that we as elected officials represent the folks that live here in our district. We don't represent lobbyists. We don't represent the government or the state of Maryland. And so what the state, when you're talking about this deficit and the problem that the state of Maryland is having, it's not the same as saying that my constituents are having this problem. My constituents are having a problem finding jobs. They're having a problem paying their mortgage. They're having a problem putting food on the table, making sure the kids get a good education. So that's what I look at first when we talk about how do we solve these problems. And solving the problem, to me, does not include putting an extra burden on the people that live in my district. That's all.
Delegate Kurt Anderson, State Senator Verna Jones-Rodwell, thank you both so much for being with Anthony McCarthy.
Yes, thank you so much.
It's great to have you both on. Thank you so much.
It's good seeing you, too. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.
And Happy New Year to you, too, Anthony, and your new svelte look over there.
I want to remind you all to call 410-454-0500 or email at summit@steinershow.org. Join us next Wednesday from 7:30 to 10 a.m. for the annual Annapolis Summit. Sponsored by the Baltimore Business Journal, this program, WEAA, Stevens University, and the Maryland State Education Association, and the Greater Baltimore Committee. We'll be there with the Governor, Speaker of the House, and President of the Senate. Reserve your seat and come join us there in Annapolis. Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns today are Chris Walker and Naomi Wasson. Welcome, Naomi. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, find out more information about our guests and their work and positions, go to the web at steinershow.org. Thank you, Anthony McCarthy, for today. And for Public Radio to be EAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.